The Vintage Gamer, Episode 32, Chess Variants.
This show is a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network, gbncom.com.
Hello, and welcome to The Vintage Gamer, the podcast that seeks out great games from an earlier era. I'm your host, Jim Van Verth. And The Vintage Gamer is brought to you by Bob's Game Shack. Go on down to Bob's, where he has a copy of Titan. It's a complete set, the original Avalon Hill, one slightly crushed corner. It is missing a few pieces, and I think it has the rules. But it's only $250. So go on down to Bob's, where you can always find a great deal. That's Bob's, in downtown, lovely Lizard Lick, North Carolina. And welcome to The Vintage Gamer. It's been a while, yes, I know. I've got a few bits of news. As you might guess, I am outside, and I will explain that in a moment. But let me talk a bit about some new things that I've been doing. On the website, if you actually go there, that's www.thevintagegamer.net, you'll notice that I've been trying to update, trying is the imperative word here, the blog on a more regular basis with some news that I think is of interest to the vintage gaming community, and that's role-playing, computer gaming, and board gaming news. So, for example, I posted news about Return to Dark Castle, which came out about a month ago. If you recall, I covered Dark Castle. It's an old Mac game. I covered that early on in this show. I don't remember the exact episode. But it is now out. It comes with the original game, the sequel, and the new one, which is Return to Dark Castle. And I've actually bought it, downloaded it, and it's a lot of fun. It harkens back to the old game. There are a few minor differences, but overall, it definitely captures the flavor of the game. Some other updates out there. There's some reprints of older Avalon Hill games, and the original Traveler is being reprinted. Go out and check out this information at www.thevintagegamer.net. As far as other news, I think that's about it for now. We're going to leap right into the show. It should be a fairly long one. So I'll be back right after this break.
Hi, I'm Andy Affleck, author of Take Control of Podcasting on the Mac and host of the podcast of the same name. The ebook, available for $10 as a PDF from TakeControlBooks.com, gives any Mac user everything they need to begin podcasting, whether they're on a budget or not. The podcast both complements the book and goes beyond it. Right now, I'm building a new home studio, looking at microphones and mixers, and I'm podcasting the entire experience. Come learn with me. The podcast is available at tcopodcasting.podbus.com and in iTunes, and the book is available at TakeControlBooks.com.
So, we are back, and I suppose you're now... That dog just picked up a huge stick. How interesting. You're wondering what I'm doing outside, I'm sure. Well, the point of this episode is to talk about chess and chess variants. And I thought it would be fun to go down to the park where they usually have some people playing at those chess boards they have set up and play a game of chess while I record an episode. But there doesn't seem to be anybody here except, as I mentioned, this dog, which seems to have wandered by with its stick. In any case, hopefully somebody will come by during the course of this episode and we can actually play a game. But until then, let me get into it. The reason I'm talking about chess is partially because I'm interested in it, but partially because in January, Bobby Fischer died. Now, I first got introduced to Bobby Fischer and chess back in 1972 when he was playing Boris Spassky in Reykjavik. And the game itself became more than just a chess game. It became representative of the fight between the United States and what was at that time the Soviet Union. And it really got me into chess. In fact, I could say that that match got me interested in adult board games for the very first time. I was also going to say that Through the Looking Glass was also a contributing factor to that. I'm thinking now that I actually bought through the looking glass because of this match. I don't have much else to say about Bobby Fischer. He was clearly a very important figure in the chess world. Unfortunately, he has sullied that with, I don't know how to say it, but basically falling off the deep end. His match against Spassky in, I think it was 95? 96? Don't remember the exact year. In any case, they went and played, and that caused a great kerfuffle. But of course, the biggest kerfuffle was when he made some rather unfortunate comments after the 9/11 attacks. And at that point, he lost me, and I know he lost a lot of other people as well. In any case, he's passed on, and he is what you say, he's an enigmatic figure, I suppose. Polarizing figure, very important, but not the sort of person that I would emulate. But, as I said, he sparked my interest in chess, and what really interests me about chess is something I discovered later. In the January-February issue, of Games Magazine of 1981, they did an article about an artist who created an entire collection of chess variants. And he was selling at that time for about, I think, $100,000. That fascinated me. Of course, I was interested in the game of chess. I didn't really play that much. I thought it was kind of a cool game. Kind of got into the whole intellectual part of it. But the variants really captured my imagination. And I ended up taking that article and starting to do some research into chess variants and turned that into a school project. And I want to talk about some of those chess variants now. Now, the reason I think chess variants are interesting, because chess itself has been explored pretty thoroughly. I mean, the experts would argue, yes, there are still depths to explore, but I don't play at an expert level. And were I to play someone who is even marginally competent, I would have my backside handed to me, because I am not marginally competent. It is the sort of game that requires a lot of study. And for those who study, it is quite rewarding, I'm sure. But I'm out of an age that I just don't have the time to do that. I've been trying to study some because I do want to appreciate the game more. But, as I said, time and, you know, the little gray cells are not as strong as they used to be. So that is also a factor as well. So for me, chess variants are a way of making chess more approachable and more appealing. So this show is for people who feel like I do. People who don't have the time or the interest to sit down and memorize books and books of opening moves. People who have played the game and, you know, they feel like they've gotten everything they want to out of it, and so they're looking for something maybe similar, but with some new challenges. There are some people, I'm not one of these people, but who consider the game too much of a brain burner. I don't mind the brain burner part. They just want to sit down with a friend and play a chess-like game without having to think too much about it. And then there are people who believe the game is solved, because now the computers can be people. Clearly the game is solved. I don't actually subscribe to this point of view. My feeling is a game is quote-unquote solved if a human being can sit down, have a given strategy, and win the game, let's say 75% of the time, maybe more. I don't believe chess has come to that yet. Between equally matched opponents, it's still a challenge to see which opponent is going to win. And a certain amount of, there's different playing styles, there's different psychologies going on there. So I don't actually consider this game solved. But for those who do, hopefully some of these variants will counteract that feeling. So let me start by, looking around and seeing. I don't see anybody around. There's some guy just mowing the grass over there, but, nope. Anyway, all right, well, hopefully somebody will show up at some point. I'm going to start by talking about the past. And this is really the first place to look when looking for chess variants, because chess didn't leap fully formed into the gaming world. It went through an evolutionary process. The first example of chess that we have is a game called Chaturanga. And Chaturanga comes from somewhere around pre-600 AD. There's some writings that indicate that's about the time period it showed up. Well, by the way, when I do this discussion, I'm going to assume that people out there already know how to play chess. I don't have the time to summarize all of the rules, all of the layouts. Basically, I'm going to take these variants and describe what's different. I'm also assuming that you know algebraic notation. Short version of that is the rows go from A to H, and the columns, or files, go from 1 to 8. Any case, Chaturanga is actually played on an 8x8 board, just like a normal chess board. The difference is that it is not checkered. They hadn't checkered the board at that point. Essentially, it is. If you saw a Chaturanga board, you would say, well, that looks like chess. As far as pieces, there are two major differences. First is that the queen has been replaced, or the queen replaces, if you think about it in the correct chronological order. In any case, going backwards, the queen has been replaced with a piece called a minister. And secondly, the bishop has been replaced by a piece called an elephant. The minister, rather than moving in orthogonal, you know, as far as it wants, in orthogonal directions and diagonal directions, like the queen, can only move one space in the diagonal directions. And the elephant has a variety of moves. It can either jump diagonally two spaces, or it can move one space in it diagonally and one space forward, so it kind of looks like the 4 feet in the trunk of the elephant. Or some people have it moving, it can move orthogonally, which is, that is, straight forward and back, or left and right. It can jump again, but two spaces, orthogonally. The game as we know it, the Chaturanga, is clearly in sort of this forming stage, trying to form a set game. Other minor differences are that the pawn doesn't have this two-step opening, and pawns will promote to the piece that lies on the file that they end up on. So, for example, if a pawn gets to the 8th rank and it lands at the minister file, it'll promote to a minister. And it'll only do this if the piece is available. Otherwise, the pawn will just sit there and wait until the piece is available. Winning is much the same as it is in chess. You win by checkmate. You can also win by removing all of your opponent's pieces. This is called except for the king. This is called a bare king. And, oddly, you can win if you are stalemated, which is, you don't have a legal move. Also, there is no castling. Instead, the king gets one knight move that it can do. And so this gives you sort of a weird two- or three-step form of castling. Basically, the king can do its knight move, the rook can move out, and then the king can move back one step. Now, Chaturanga moved from India to Persia, and from there to the rest of the Arabian world. And when it did that, it became a game called Chatrange. Now, Chatrange is very much like Chaturanga. The main differences are that the minister has now become something called a counselor, has the same move, one space diagonally. The elephant has now settled in to its a two-space jump diagonally. And the foot soldier, the pawn, on promotion, doesn't promote to the piece in the same file, it just promotes to a minister. Similarly, you win by checkmate, you win by bare king, unless the opponent can take your last piece on its next move, his next move, in which case the game is a draw. And now you can win if you stalemate your opponent, which is the opposite of Chaturanga. Otherwise, it's pretty much the same game. One thing I forgot to mention about both Chaturanga and Chatrange is that the placement of the minister king, counselor king, is not set in stone at this point. in Chaturanga, the back rows of each person look exactly the same relative to that person. So the kings are diagonally opposed, as it were. So in one case, the king is in the E column, in the other, the king is in the D column. In Chaturanga, the kings are always orthogonally opposed. I'm moving my hands here, but you can't see me. This is a podcast, after all. But you can choose whether it's the D file you're on or the E file. Both have to be in the same file, but it can be D or E. Now, from Chaturanga, the game branches greatly. One of the problems with these two games is that opening movement is very slow. This is something to keep in mind if you're considering playing them. The development of the two-space pawn opening, the development of castling, the development of the queen having its large movement capabilities, the development of the bishop having its larger movement capabilities, all of these led to a faster opening game. You can get to the mid-game much faster this way. So people tried to find different ways of getting the game to this mid-game of where, you know, there's lots more capturing, lots more attacking, lots more tactics going on. One way they did this was Ethiopian chess, which had movement would be very fast at the opening. Players would move simultaneously, just start moving pieces simultaneously until the first capture, in which case it would settle down and do the standard alternating one player, one the other player kind of movement. Otherwise, Ethiopian chess was pretty much similar to Chaturanga. Another example of this is Burmese chess, where the pawns were placed in this strange sort of diagonal pattern. And so they were exactly one row apart, along semi-diagonal. And players could place their pieces behind that standard diagonal pattern any way they wanted. Another example of this is Cambodian or Siamese chess, where the pawns are advanced towards each other, yeah, one row, essentially giving an automatic one step. And there's some other minor changes there, but pretty much, again, it's trying to get this game moving faster, get into the mid-game much faster. Some other variants on Chaturanga are playing with the space of the board and the type of pieces that are used. One example of this is Citadel chess, and another is Tamerlane chess. And a further is something called Great Chess. And I'll just kind of give you brief summaries of all of those. All of them are played on 10x10 or 10x11 boards. Tamerlane is playing at a 10x11 board. Citadel Chess also has some additional spaces. There are four additional spaces placed at the four corners, sometimes diagonally to the corners, sometimes right next to the corners, the existing 10x10 corners. These spaces are called citadels, and if you can move your king to the opposing citadel, then you can draw the game. And all of these pieces, because they have bigger boards, have extra pieces. So, for example, Citadel chess has two pieces called the dababas, and these move like a bishop. This is in addition to the elephant, which kind of represents the bishop, but doesn't move like it. Tamerlane chess, there are four new pieces. One piece is called the vizier, and it moves one space orthogonally. There are two pieces that are kind of like super knights. There's a giraffe, and there's a camel. The giraffe moves a really long step, moves one space in one direction orthogonally, and then four spaces in the other direction. And the camel moves one space in one direction, then three spaces in the other direction. So kind of a longer knight. Actually, I believe the giraffe can move more than three spaces straight. So it's actually a really long knight. The difference is, whereas the knight and the camel can jump, the giraffe cannot be blocked. And finally, there's a piece called a picket, which can move diagonally as any number of spaces until, of course, it hits another piece, as long as that number of spaces it moves is two or more. The other odd thing about Tamerlane chess is that all of the pawns are smaller representations of the pieces that they can promote to. So, for example, there's a minister pawn, and there's a, you know, a little, there's a knight pawn, and there's a rook or chariot pawn. I forgot to mention that rooks were chariots early on. And when you get that pawn to the end, then you can promote it to that piece. And there are two other pieces. There is a pawn of pawns, and there is a pawn of kings. The pawn of pawns does a lot of weird stuff. Basically, it sits at the back row until it can be placed in a position where it can capture another piece. So you can, later on in the game, you can pick it up from that back row, put it down, and attack another piece with it. And then if it advances to the back row again, then it promotes to something called a prince, which basically acts like a mini king and has to be checkmate, or it actually can be captured as opposed to the king, but it has to be checkmated like the king if it's not already captured. And the pawn of kings promotes to... I'm sorry, the pawn of kings promotes to a prince. The pawn of pawns promotes to an adventitious king. Both of these act in the same way that I just described. And Great Chess, another 10x10 board, has a rather odd setup. It crams some more pieces in there by advancing a few of the pawns forward and squeezing the pieces in there in front of sort of the king-queen area. The additional pieces are a giraffe, a vizier, and a dababa. In this case, the giraffe, it's named similar to the one in Tamerlane chess, doesn't move the same. In fact, it actually moves like a queen and a knight. The vizier moves like a bishop and a knight, and the dababa moves like a rook and a knight. And I believe that Great Chess is a later variant, which is why you get some of the... When I say queen, I mean the modern queen, which is why you get some of these modern moves in there. A few others of this time period, and then I will take a break here. There is also Chaturaji, which is a forehand chaturanga. Now, some people believed originally that this was actually the precursor to chaturanga, that it was a dice and gambling game, therefore it came first, and then chaturanga, the more strategic game, grew out of that. There's a little more evidence now that says that chaturanga came first, and then chaturangi was a variant of that. In any case, it's played again on an 8x8 board, but each player has only 8 pieces, 4 pawns, and 4 major pieces. And they're kind of set up in the corner. Basically, you get half a normal row of chess. Your half is kind of stuck in the, respective to you, the left-hand corner of the board. And as I said, it's a gambling game. You collect points by the pieces that you capture. If you manage to capture your opponent's king, you don't win the game. They are out of the game. They are eliminated, and their pieces are available just for free capture. They just sit there. You can play as teams, and you can play that you roll dice to determine which piece you move. Another kind of unusual variant that kind of reappeared later on is something called round chess. And one way to think of this is it's instead of being a 8x8 board, it's a 4x16 board. And it's wrapped around in a ring, so the four spaces are connected together. And so you take two half rows and you stick them together so that the major pieces are in the center and the pawns are on the outside. It's hard to describe. I'll put some links to some pages so you can actually see it. In any case, each player has two rows of four pawns that advance towards each other. There are two different variants of this. One has the kings on the inside of the circle. Another has the kings on the outside, and there are four citadel spaces in the center. If the king can move there, then you get a draw. So, I believe that is all I'm going to talk about for kind of the past games. Let's take a little break here, and then I'm going to talk about games that come from other countries and as another approach to chess variants.
Hello, I'm Don Tam.
I'm Derek Rex.
And I'm Jeremiah Lynch.
Every once in a while, we like to let down our hair and go out of character to talk to you, respond to your feedback, and talk about some things we're finding notable about our world.
The world we live in is one of board games, card games, and role-playing games.
We produce several podcasts on such topics, but this is the one that allows us to get open up and freestyle a little bit.
It gets a little crazy sometimes, but we mostly stay on topic.
Come join us at PulpGamer.com. That's PulpGamer.com. And look for the Out of Character podcast.
Don't forget your dice.
PulpGamer.com.
Okay, we are back. I see that the gentleman mowing the lawn has gotten a little closer, but, well, I'll deal. And no one has shown up here yet to play chess with me. This kind of sucks. Well, I'll press on here. Hopefully this is interesting enough to you that we don't actually need to do that. Let's move on to other countries. Now, we kind of talked about India and Persia, but those are really following a direct line from Chaturanga to what we now think of as chess, at least in the European world. When you say chess in China or Japan, well, that's an entirely different thing. In China, there's a game called, forgive me if I pronounce this wrong, it's a Xiangqi, also known as just Chinese chess. And the first, at least as far as I could find, the first recorded mention of this game is in 762. It was actually stable in terms of how it played compared to the modern day by 1127. Now, there's some debate, again, which game came first, whether it was Chaturanga or whether it was Chinese chess. Some said that Chinese chess is derived from Chaturanga, but as we'll see, it's played very differently than Chaturanga. Similar, but different. So there is a possibility that both games grew out of a common game that we just don't have any record of anymore. Chinese chess is played, if you're familiar with the game Go, where it is played on a grid, and instead of the pieces being played in the center of the square, it's actually played on each corner, the corner of the grid. And Xiangqi is played on a 9x10 grid. The middle squares of this are called a river, and there are no grid lines across, and these restrict certain pieces from crossing and also give pieces special abilities if they get across. Also, the back center squares, the four back center squares, I guess you can think the nine back center grid points, are something called the palace. And there are also two additional diagonal lines, opposing diagonal lines that form this palace. And unlike other games, other chess games, where the pieces are figures, like, you know, in standard chess, the pieces are actually discs. And I haven't found any research to indicate this one way or the other. My personal theory is that this is just the economy of the Chinese, that Xiangqi was a game of the lower classes, whereas Go in Japan, or I think, I'm forgetting the Chinese name, I think it's Wei Qi, was a game of the upper classes. And, I mean, it's much cheaper to create a disc and write a character on it than it is to carve a foreign piece. It's just a theory. I could be completely off base here. Any case, here are the pieces, and I'm just going to describe these from the center back. There is a piece which represents the king, but it's called the general, and it moves one square in the orthogonal directions. There are two advisors on either side of that king, and they move one space in the diagonal directions. Now, both these pieces, the generals and the advisors, have to remain in the palace. They can't leave those nine center grid points. On either side of those, there are two elephants, also known as ministers, and they can move two squares in the diagonal direction, just like the elephants in Chaturanga. On the other side of those are two horses, and they can move just like, similar to normal horses, but they move one square orthogonally and then one square diagonally away. And this is not a jump. Hello, doggy. Yes, it's good to see you too. This is not a jump. These spaces have to be available for movement. On either side of those, there are two chariots. Again, I didn't say this at the time, but at Chaturanga, the rooks are called chariots. And they can move, like rooks, any number of squares in the orthogonal direction. Again, as long as they don't hit another piece. Finally, there are two pieces called cannons. They are placed two rows before the horses. So basically, if you look at the back row and move two rows forward, the cannons are placed there. They can move in squares in any direction, but they must jump to capture. That gives you an idea of a cannon. Finally, there are five pawns, and those are spaced out one every other grid square. And those are, if you advance three rows from the back, that's where they are. They can move one space forward, and they capture one space forward as well. After they cross the river, then they can move side to side. Oh, I forgot to mention that the elephants cannot cross the river. I don't know why. Normally elephants can't cross rivers in real life, but anyway. The game, just like all the other chess games we've talked about, you can win by checkmate, and there are some rules to avoid repeated positions, which I believe leads to stalemate, just like in orthogonal chess. Orthogonal chess? ortho chess. This is a game for people who think that chess is solved because computers can win. Right now, the best human players are still better than the best computer players. It is predicted this game will be solved in the computer sense by 2010. Computers are getting faster and faster, programmers are getting better and better, but, you've got a few years before then, so enjoy it while you can. A possible variant of... Now what? Okay. Excuse me a second here. Yeah, hello? Oh, hey Bob, how's it going? Actually I'm out here recording the show, Bob. Yes, of course, I mentioned you. So what's up? Yeah, you got the chess sets in. Excellent. That is great news. Okay, did you get the Simpsons one? People love the Simpsons one. You can easily mark that one up to $100. Well, listen, Bob, can you help me out here? I have been sitting out here in the park for a while, and no one has come up to play chess with me. Would you be willing to play a chess game with me? Hey, that's great. Great. Okay. Do you care black or white? I mean, we can't really choose, but... Okay. Well, why don't I take white? We'll just go from there. So I'll do, standard opening. How about E4? Does that work for you? Yeah, Bob, it's E4. It's a standard opening, Bob. All right, Bob. All right, tell you what. You think it over, give me a call back, and let me know. All right? All right, great. I'll talk to you later. Bob, sponsor. Where was I? Right, I was talking about a variant. Possible variant of this is, again, not exactly sure how to pronounce this. Forgive me, my pronunciation. It's Korean chess. It's, I believe it's Changi. Very similar game, similar layout, few different moves. Remember the chariots? They move like rooks. Well, they can also move along the diagonals of the palace, in addition to moving n spaces in any direction. The elephant can move one space orthogonally, and then two spaces diagonally. In replacing the one space orthogonal to one space diagonal, respectively, moves for the general and the advisors, well, they can move along any of the lines in the fortress. In general, you can think of Shang-Chi as just adding some movement variants along these lines in the fortress. I'm not sure. I think these movement types might be an older version of Chinese chess. Don't quite remember. I've researched a lot of games, so I don't remember exactly, but I think that's how it worked. So that's Korean chess. So, okay. Excuse me a minute. Hello? Hey, Bob. I got your move? Excellent. So, E5. E5, that's an excellent move. All right, great. Then I'll do knight to F3. Bob, it's Roy Lopez. It's a standard opening, Bob. All right, just give me a call back. I'll talk to you later. Okay. So, moving on from there. So, we've covered Chinese and Korean chess. The other major Asian country that we haven't talked about is Japan. And they, of course, have their own variant of chess called shogi. This is played on a 9x9 board. Like ortho chess or international chess, the pieces are placed inside the squares, not on the corners, not like Chinese chess. I believe the earliest record of shogi is 1058. Again, not clear whether it came from... Well, it's clear it didn't... It's not a direct descendant of Chinese chess, but it's not clear whether it came from Chaturanga or some later variant, or from some other earlier game that we're not aware of. Again, completely different set of pieces. Unlike the discs that we see in Chinese chess, shogi has these weird pentagonally shaped pieces, not exact pentagons. They're kind of wedge-shaped, hard to describe. Again, I'll have links and you can go look at the pictures. So, again, looking at the back row from the center out, we have a king, which can move just like a normal king. There are two gold generals, which can move one space orthogonally or one space forward diagonally. There are two silver generals, which move like one of the elephant variants from Chaturanga. So one space diagonally or one space forward. There are two knights, and these move like knights, but they can only move forward. So they can't move anywhere they want on the board. There are two lances, and lances can move n spaces, but they can only move forward. So you can see this whole game is kind of pushing forward towards the opponent. So that's from kind of the center out. The next rank forward, we have one bishop, which is placed before the left knight, and that can move just like a normal bishop. We have one rook, which is placed before the right-hand knight, and that can move n spaces orthogonally. So, again, like a rook. And then the next rank after that, there are 9 pawns, and these can move. I have here n spaces forward, but I think it's one space forward. And they capture forward as well. Again, you can see this game is sort of a weird amalgam of Chinese chess and the Chaturanga. The interesting thing about this game is that captured pieces are kept in your hand. They're not just removed from the game like they are in normal chess and the other chess variants we talked about. You can actually take these pieces and place them on the board as one of your moves. Promotion rules are very interesting too. Rather than advancing to the last rank and then promoting, you advance to enemy territory and then you are allowed to promote. If you advance to the last rank, you must promote. So the silver general, the knight, and the lance can all promote to a gold general. The bishop and the rook advance, and they promote by adding an additional move of being able to move like a king. So one space in any direction. And the pawns also promote to a gold general like the other pieces. And you promote by just turning the piece over. So on one side it has the character that represents, you know, whatever piece type it is, and then you turn it over and it represents the other piece type. And some of the English versions of this game also represent the movement that you can do as a shape on the piece. So you don't have to remember the Japanese characters if you can't read Japanese. Like all these other games, you win via checkmate. And this game also adds draw by repetition, just like Xiangqi. Now, as I mentioned, this game is a the standard game as it's played now is on a 9x9 board, and there are other variants of this. There's Dai Shogi, which has a lot more pieces, and it's played on a 15x15 board. There is a Chushogi, or middle game, which is played on a 12x12 board and it has 4+ ranks of pieces. And then there's Taikyogi Shogi, which is played on a 36x36 board, and I would expect takes a very long time to play. Now, I think it's the Abstract Gamer, and I'll include a link to this in the show notes, did a show on Shogi, and in particular did a show on Chushogi. And so I highly recommend you listen to that if you are interested in Shogi and interested in this sort of larger variants of Shogi. Another thing is, if you are interested in playing Shogi but don't want to actually go out and have to buy a set or try to find an opponent, there's a computer version of Shogi called Canoe Shogi that you can go out there and play. So that's Shogi. Oop. Oh. And here's Bob again. Hello, Bob. Oops, let me answer the phone here. Hey, Bob. So, you got a move for me yet? Oh, D6. Excellent. The Philidor opening. All right. That's kind of unexpected. Let me think for a moment here. How about Bishop to C4? I hear some keys there clicking, Bob. Are you using a... Bob, don't use the... All right. Bishop to G4. All right. How about... Knight to C3. Bob. Bobby, you're using a computer and you don't know which move to make? All right. Give me a call back when you're ready. Okay. Anyway. Well, let's take a break here while Bob thinks, and we'll be back in a bit.
Managers, do you have problems with workers coming in late, leaving early, and taking too long of a lunch break? Let's face it, employees these days are not hardworking. They're too busy checking email, reading blogs, chatting with their new friend in Sweden, who's really a hairy guy from Duluth, or, God forbid, listening to podcasts, to be of any real use to you. This is where Zombank can help you. We are, among other things, a zombie placement service that will supply you with workers that will work tirelessly around the clock. They don't need breaks. They don't need social security. And if there's a workplace accident, there's none of that pesky short-term disability or lawsuits. Simply return the damaged zombie to us, and you'll be supplied with a new one. Think of Zombink when you see that lifeless, uninterested look in your living employee's eyes. At least with zombies, that lifeless, uninterested look will be on the face of a hard worker. Zombink can supply you with workers for construction, farming, security, janitorial services, and web design. And we're adding new services every month. Please visit our website at zombink.net to order your own service today. Clients of Zombink are responsible for the well-being of their human employees, customers, and visitors. Employ zombies at your own risk. All mutilations, dismemberments, death, or the transfer of the zombie curse to the responsibility of the client, not Zombink. You're hiring zombies. What do you expect?
Oh, welcome back. I'm still here in the park. I have not heard anything from Bob yet. On the good side, the groundskeepers seem to have wandered away, so it should be a little less of that lawnmower noise. Well, let's press on while we wait for Bob to get back to us. So, we've talked about the historical variants, and we've talked some about what I would call international variants, although most people call European chess international chess. So, let's talk about some of the more unusual variants. Some people would even say weird. So one of the first approaches you can take when trying to create a chess variant is to change the board. And we've already seen one example of this when talking about round chess. Remember, that is a game where the board is 4 concentric circles and they're divided up like a pie. But following in that vein, we could also have spherical chess, where you play chess on a sphere. There's also toroid chess, which you can think of as chess on a donut. And this is a game you can play on a normal chessboard. All you do is, when you go off one edge of the board, you just wrap around to the other side. This works for both the sides and the front and back. A more restricted version of this is cylindrical chess, where I believe only the two sides are connected. Another way to go is to just forego square spaces entirely and do hexagonal squares, in which case there are six squares attached to each interior. Well, they're not squares anymore, I suppose they're just spaces. And in this case, you have to do something unusual with the bishops. The orthogonal move is considered moving along any of the six possible directions. And bishops, since there's no real diagonal move, the board is colored with three different colors. So the bishops can move from color to color. And they can do the same bishop move of moving in spaces in that color direction. Another thing to note is that because there are three colors, there are now three bishops. And a queen is a combination of these moves. You can move in any of these six directions plus this special bishop move. A knight, essentially you move two spaces in the orthogonal direction, then you move one space 60 degrees to that. There's also 3D chess, which there are a number of different variants for this, the most famous being the Star Trek version, which Mr. Spock seems to enjoy so much. I haven't actually played this one. My understanding is, in particular, the Star Trek version doesn't play terribly well. But if you're interested, you can give it a try. There's also mini chess, which we can think of as the opposite approach taken with the maxi versions that we saw with the 10x10 boards. These are smaller boards, like a 7x7 or a 5x5 board, and the point here is to, again, get the game going faster, play a shorter game of chess. So that's a sampling of the variants that we can do just by changing the board. Now, okay, there's Bob. Hey, Bob, how's it going? Finally got back to me, huh? All right, you got a move for me? Okay, pawn to h6. Okay. How about I'll do knight takes e5. How about that, a capture? Exciting. Bob, you're using the computer and you're not ready? Oh, you got a customer. All right, well, I know how rare those are, so you deal with your customer and give me a call back when you're ready. Talk to you later. So, right, and I was talking about different boards. Actually, there is one other board that I didn't talk about, and this is a game I discovered recently. It's called Beyond Chess, and this completely abstracts the board entirely. The idea of Beyond Chess is that the board is made up of 64 tiles, alternating black and white like a normal chessboard. This is the initial setup, but on your turn, you move a piece. Then you move one of the squares. And so the board becomes this rather abstract mishmash of different islands, and you have to start connecting the islands together again by moving tiles. I haven't played it, but it looked rather interesting. So that deals with the different board types. You can also give pieces different moves, and we've seen some of that in the historical variants. However, beyond that, there was a class of chess problems called fairy chess that took the standard white to mate in two moves type problem and started adding unusual pieces to it. And these appeared around the early 20th century. Some of these problems introduced the pieces that we've seen in the historical variants. So, for example, we have rook plus a knight, that have various names, chancellor, empress, marshal. Bishop plus knight, known as the archbishop, or the princess, or the cardinal. Or a queen plus a knight, which is commonly known as a giraffe. And yes, we've seen that one before. But there are some other ones, too, like the grasshopper, which must jump to both move and capture. It's represented by an upside-down queen. So it has the normal queen move. It can go in both the orthogonal and the diagonal directions, but it must jump over a piece. And commonly this is played by moving the pawns forward one rank and then placing grasshoppers along the row behind the pawns. Clearly they have one quick opening move there. They just jump over the pawn. Another one of these pieces is the Knight Rider, and this takes the knight and combines it with the n or more moves of the bishop, queen, and rook. So it's a knight, but you can make more than one jumping move. Now, you have to keep going in the same direction, but you can jump until you either hit another piece of your color or can obviously capture a piece of the opposite color. So what you can do if you want to take advantage of these pieces is to just either replace them in your game, let's say replace one of the bishops with an archbishop or something like that, and try it out. On top of that, there's a classification that I just call the mode of play. Rather than changing the actual rules of the game or the board, it's just changing how you play the game from turn to turn. The first example of this is Kriegsspiel, or simply war game, and this is played on two different boards. Each player has their own board, and there's also a moderator. On each player's board is just their pieces. So when they make a move, the moderator says, yes, you can make that move, and they also tell them whether they've captured an opponent's piece. So the only way they can tell where the opponent's pieces are is through logic. Essentially, it simulates the fog of war that you get in an actual war. Another example variant that uses two boards is Alice. Now, this is played without a moderator, and it starts on one board with the normal set of pieces, both black and white. But every time you make a move, you have to move your piece to the other board. And obviously, if you play from the second board, you have to move back to the first one. You cannot make a move which is illegal on both boards. Another example doesn't use additional boards, but actually uses additional moves. And this is called progressive chess. In this variant, the first player plays one move, so moves one piece. The second player plays two moves. And then back to the first player who does three moves, and so on, the number of moves increasing more and more. Now, obviously, this game will end quickly in terms of turns, not sure, and quickly in terms of moves. There are various rules on dealing with checks. There are three major variants of these, the Italian, the Scottish, and the English rules. And I'll include a link if you want to go check those out. Now, there are some variants that begin with the core rules, but add just a little additional twist, sort of randomness to the original game. And these are the ones that I'd recommend to the people who don't want to play a brain burner, but want to feel like they're playing chess. The first of these is Nightmare Chess, and there's Nightmare Chess 1 and 2. The idea of Nightmare Chess is that you're playing a normal chess game, but you also have a deck of cards. And these cards allow you to change the rules of the game. So, for example, on your turn, rather than moving a piece, you could play a card that allows you to move one of your pieces across the board, or bring one of your captured pieces back into play, or maybe bring one of your opponent's captured pieces into play as your piece, or maybe swap the board entirely so you're now playing the other side. As I said, it does add a bit of randomness to the game, but if that's what you're looking for, then you might find this enjoyable. A less random, but still random, version of this, which I just heard about, is the Chess Equalizer. And this is a 10-sided die, actually it's a set of two 10-sided dice, which have piece symbols on them. And this harkens back to the Shataraji game, where you're rolling dice to see which piece you move. Now, obviously if you go with the base idea of just rolling dice, then it becomes a far less strategic game, and back to the more of the gambling game of Shataraji. But you can use this in ways to as it says, equalize a game between unequal opponents. So, for example, if a beginner is playing an expert, then the beginner could play the normal chess game, whereas the expert uses the dice. Or the beginner can roll both dice and choose the one that best suits them, and then the expert has to use the die that is left over. I should mention that one of the sides of the die has an infinity sign on it, which means you can play any piece you want. Another alternative is to consider multiplayer versions of the game. And cut. Hey, Bob. Okay, you got rid of the customer? Excellent. Oh, they bought the copy of Titan. Huh. Oh, well. I mentioned it on the show. Anyway, what you got? Okay, bishop takes d1. All right. Well, I'll respond with bishop takes f7. Yeah, Bob, I'm sorry. It's the end, Bob. All right. King d7. Yep, that's the only one. Knight d5. Checkmate. Well, thank you for playing, Bob. I'm sorry you didn't win. Bob, if you want to get better at chess, here are some recommendations I have. First of all, there's a good set of books out there by Microsoft Press. Yeah, that's good. It's by Yasser Seirawan. I believe that's how you pronounce his name. There's also some good books by Jeffrey Silman. It's called Reassess Your Chess. That's a little more for advanced people. Yeah, I don't think either of us is ready for that right now. An alternative is you can get... it sounds like your chess program isn't very good. So you might want to get a better chess program. There's one out there called Chessmaster that's published by my old company, Ubisoft. I got it for free because I was working for Ubisoft, but it's reasonably priced, and for a beginner, it's supposed to be pretty good. It's got some really good tutorials in it, I know that. An alternative to that, if you're feeling like you want to play something a little more challenging, there's Chess Base, and they publish a game called Fritz. And this is actually, Deep Fritz is a multiprocessor version of Fritz, and this is the one that actually is proven to beat humans on a regular basis. But it also comes with some nice analysis software, so you can analyze your game a little better. You'll get there, Bob. Don't worry about it. Thanks for playing chess with me, and I guess I'll talk to you later. Bye. Anyway, I was talking about multiplayer versions of the game, one of which I mentioned already. That's four-hand Chaturanga, or four-player Chaturanga, Chaturaji. Another one I saw is called Chess 4, and there's a variety of variants on this. Essentially, this takes the standard chess board and then extends it out on each side. And then the pieces are set up in those squares. And it's another one of those games you can either play partnership or you can play winner-take-all. A big favorite of the chess aficionados is Bug House. This is another two-board game, which is not that you're bored or... Oh, never mind. There are two chess boards, but it's played with four players, two players at each board. And what happens is that when you capture a piece, you hand it to your partner. So you're playing white, and your partner is playing black. So you capture black's piece, you hand it to your partner, and now they, just like in Shogi, they can put their piece in as one of their moves. An alternate variant of this is a two-player version called Crazy House, but in that case you have to have another set of chess pieces so that you can bring your particular color into play. One of the games I didn't mention, which is an ancient variant, is called Game of Four Seasons, and this is a medieval Spanish variant. You can think of it like four-hand Chaturanga. In this case, the pieces, rather than being aligned in this nice 4x2 grid, they're kind of crammed in the corner with the pawns wrapping around in this semi-arc shape. Again, the players that are kitty-corner from each other can act as partners, and they win by checkmating the other team's kings. Finally, I want to talk about some variants that I'm just calling modern variants These are variants that are popular, again, with the chess aficionados, but they're still two-player games. The first one of these is known under a variety of names. Chess 960 is one. Fischer Random is another. So named because Bobby Fischer came up with it. He, like a lot of us, was tired of the rote memorization of opening moves, and his solution was to randomize the opening set. And he had a certain set of rules so that castling was still possible. I believe there are 960 possible opening positions, which is why it's called Chess 960. Using this, you're more dependent on opening theory more than memorizing particular openings. Then there are two other variants that I want to cover, and these, they're more like the ancient games I talked about, the more ancient Persian games. They're both played on 10x10 boards, but they're created by modern designers. And the first is called Grand Chess. It was designed in 1984 by Christian Freeling. As I mentioned, it's played on a 10x10 board, and it's got two additional pieces known as the Marshal, which is a rook plus a knight, and the Cardinal, which is a bishop plus a knight. And on the back row, there are no pieces except two rooks at the extreme corners. Then on the next row up are the rest of the major pieces, and these are pushed in so that the outer squares are empty, so the rooks have room to move forward. Essentially, the king and queen are slid over two spaces, and the marshal and cardinal are placed next to them. And there are 10 pawns beyond that. Obviously, there's no castling because the king and rooks are not on the same rank anymore. But one of the advantages of castling was that it gets your rooks out faster. Well, you don't need that anymore because now the rooks have free rein of the back row. The pawns move like normal pawns in standard FIDE international chess, can make the initial two-step move. They can promote if they get to the 8th or 9th rank, and must promote if they get to the 10th. And this is similar to shogi. If you recall, if you move into the enemy's territory, then you have the opportunity to promote, and only must promote if you get to the end. And they can only promote to a friendly captured piece. They can't advance to the last row if none of your pieces are already captured. And you win by the normal means, by checkmate, and stalemate exists too. The final variant I want to talk about is Omega Chess, designed in 1992, designed by a fellow named Daniel McDonald, again a 10x10 board. It has a similar board to Citadel Chess, in that it has four extra spaces at each of the four corners. It adds four new pieces, two champions and two wizards. The champions are placed at the outer corners outside the rooks, so now they're on the outside in that the base 10x10 square. And the wizards are in these new corner spaces. The champions can move one space orthogonally and make a two-space jump in any direction. So you can think of them as a combination of the dababa type I mentioned, and the elephant. And the wizards, you can kind of think of this as a long knight. Because this is a 10x10 board, in order to get the pawns advanced quickly, so you can get into that mid-game phase sooner, the pawns can move either one, two, or three spaces on their first move. And in any case, en passant still applies. And pawns can promote any piece other than the king. And because the king and the rooks are on the same row, castling is allowed. So that about covers everything I want to talk about on this show. I'm not going to do any feedback this time. A couple reasons for that. Number one is that I don't have the computer out here, so I can't actually look at the feedback. The other reason is that I'm way behind on feedback, and I apologize for that. Obviously, the show's been on hiatus for a while, and I'm not really sure what to do about the past feedback. I think what I'm going to do is this. I am going to do a reboot on feedback in terms of mentioning it on the show. However, I am going to go through and answer all my email and say hello to everybody and thank you for listening and all of that. Any new feedback I get, I will incorporate into the show if possible. I will say one of the best ways to get my attention is to respond to the forums, either Board Game Geek or at the website, just because of the, let's face it, public pressure is the best way to get people to do things. In any case, if you want to send me feedback, you can send me email at vintagejim@gmail.com. You can go to the aforementioned website, which is www.vintagegamer.net. You can go to Board Game Geek and respond either at the podcasts and blogs forum, or you can go to the Vintage Gamer Guild, where there are some forums there. But other than that, this concludes yet another benighted episode of the Vintage Gamer. Our theme music is performed by the trio Music of the Spheres and available on the album of the same name at magnatune.com. Your humble host is Jim Van Verth. The Vintage Gamer will return with another game from the past. Until then, keep trying those new games, but don't forget to play the old ones. Thanks for listening.